cash, every movie costs $2,184.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Backtracks Theme Music. My name is Corey Morissette, joined, as always, by the effervescent John Mariano. How's it going today, John?
Shit, piss, fuck, cunt, cocksucker, motherfucker, and tits.
Gesundheit.
Look, we are talking about bad words today, so I figured I'd bring the king to the table. If we're going to be talking about bad words, we should at least mention the seven dirty words as populated by as made popular by the one and only George Carlin.
The legendary George Carlin. Absolutely. Great way to start the show, especially a movie about bad words, which I'd never seen before until John told me I should watch it this past weekend. And what a little diamond in the rough. I'd never seen it. Hadn't heard much about it.
Cocksucker. C-O-C-K-S-U-C-K-E-R. Cocksucker.
Do you want me to go back and change anything there, John, so you could hit that better? Or
no.
Like, no, I can cut that.
No, there's no editing. We are...
No, I'm editing.
No, I don't want to do that.
I don't want to ruin your cocksucking moment.
No, I don't want you to ruin my cocksucking moment. I feel like anytime you interject with spelling a dirty word, it's a good moment in the show.
M-O-T-H-E-R-F-U-C-K-E-R. Motherfucker.
Country of origin, please.
America, I think.
Oh, that's fair.
I was hoping you'd ask me to use it in a sentence.
Could you use the word fuck in a sentence?
But my word is motherfucker.
Okay, well, you can use motherfucker in a sentence.
You're a dirty motherfucker, John Mariano. That's my sentence.
Okay. Well, I'll use fuck in a sentence for you.
Okay.
Right? Because as George Carlin once said, fuck is the most beautiful word in the English language because you use it as almost every word in the sentence.
That's true.
If you were to say, fuck the fucking fuckers.
maybe tell the folks, John, about Bad Words.
So Bad Words is a small film made in 2014 by Jason Bateman. I think it might be his production company as well. I am going kind of off of memory here. But it seemed like it was a passion project of Jason Bateman. And it's about an adult who, for reasons that we'll get into, because this is going to be a very spoiler-heavy episode, as they all are, enters the children's spelling bee or a series of children's spelling bees with the goal of entering the national spelling bee for reasons we'll get into later.
Yeah, it really kind of ruins the whole thing if you talk about why. And they make it a big deal in the movie. He's actually, in order to be in this spelling bee, to get to the National Spelling Bee, he has to be sponsored by a legitimate newspaper, which he is. And I can't remember the name of the online paper that is sponsoring him, but Catherine Hahn is the reporter. And she's sponsoring him just on the sole premise that he's going to give her an interview and explain why the hell this 40-year-old man and an eighth-grade dropout is entering the National Golden Quill Spelling Bee through an insane loophole that says as long as you aren't past the eighth grade in your education, you're eligible to compete.
Yeah, and the best part is it really takes no prisoners, especially early on. You know, Jason Bateman's character gets in there and he is just trash talking every single one of these eighth grade kids, and you know, in the worst imaginable ways possible. The movie was directed by Jason Bateman. It was written by Andrew Dodge. So this really was a passion project for Bateman because he starred in and directed it. But he just takes no prisoners and goes after these kids the way any super competitive adult would go after another super competitive adult. And that's part of the charm of the movie for me.
I tell you, this script by Andrew Dodge was on the blacklist. Do you know what the blacklist is, John?
Yeah. It's when you get banned as a writer from Hollywood, right?
Nope. That was a different blacklist. That was a little bit earlier. The blacklist now, they do this every year. It's a list of the best unproduced screenplays in Hollywood. And this script was on the 2011 blacklist for unproduced screenplays in Hollywood. It got to Jason Bateman. And yeah, he just wanted to direct it. He was trying to find an actor to play Guy Trimbley, but couldn't find anybody. Everybody kept passing on it until he decided, I'll just do it myself. But he is the perfect, absolute perfect actor to play this part. I'm so glad everybody else passed on it.
Yeah, and if you're looking for a movie that is really different than everything else you're seeing, like, that's part of the beauty of these smaller independent movies, is you get a different flavor. Like, there's no really romance to it. Sure, there's romance between him and Catherine Hahn's character, but it's...
Don't look at me.
Don't look at me. which is their cry of passion as they're in the throes of sex, is don't look at me. Stop making eye contact.
Yeah. This is such a wonderful little movie. And the opening scene really sets the stage, because he's at one of these regional spelling bees to try and qualify for the national Golden Quill spelling bee. Apparently, they initially were going to use... what's the name of the actual spelling bee that's quite popular in the States?
Oh, it's the Scribbs National Spelling Bee.
Yeah, but they didn't think they'd ever get the rights to it, so they made it a fictional spelling bee. But to see how he, you know, the parents, you know, who spend a lot of money to get their kids going in spelling bee, see this 40-year-old dickhead just start, you know, showing off their kids. It's really quite wonderful.
Yeah, every time they throw an asinine word at him, he just knows it, because he's had so much more time to study all the words and countries of origin. And he has a photographic memory, which they cover in the movie. So he's obviously going and reading the dictionary or whatever he's doing, and has just a photographic memory. So as they throw words at him, he gets them right.
Yeah. And it is all leading up to why he's doing this. And I really hope we don't spoil that today, John, because I want to leave, it is not a lot of people saw this movie. I'm hoping a lot more people will check it out after listening to this show. And let's leave that spoiler free for him if we can, because I had no idea going into it what the fuck he was doing this for. You can kind of piece it along as you go, and about halfway through you figure it out. But Jason Bateman as a director, I thought, really does a good job of taking you on that journey to that final stage of the film.
You know what? He does balance this film with a very deft hand, because it is a very dark comedy, and then there are moments and beats of real life, either whether you want to call it drama, or just very real moments in the movie. And I think he delivers on both fronts as a director, especially first time director.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's probably to his benefit that he's been acting since he was a child and been around this, you know, since he was a child, but really understands the craft and the industry. And you can tell that, you know, I really would, one of the things that comes out of rewatching this movie is I really feel like he should be directing more.
Absolutely, especially the way he gets performances out of his actors. Like, you could tell he's an actor's director, because some standout performances from Catherine Hahn, from Philip Baker Hall, from Allison Janney, just some really, really strongly acted film.
You know what? You can't underscore Rowan Chand, mm-hmm. who plays Chaitanya. I'm gonna kill this name, but Chaitanya Chopra. Who is his best friend and eventual rival in the spelling bee, and their relationship really is the crux of the film in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and it ties in nicely with the whole MacGuffin of why he's doing this too. Like I said, yeah. Very well balanced, very well done. But we got to talk about a song from this movie, because that's what we do here. So we had a few choices. There was a couple of Beastie Boys songs, one that was playing during their night on the town, which would have been kind of fun. But John, this was your pick this week, and you opted to go with the Smashing Pumpkins tune. Maybe tell us about that.
So I picked the Smashing Pumpkins tune because while there's a lot of songs on the soundtrack, we were really leaning towards one of the more popular bands, and that narrowed it down to the Smashing Pumpkins and the Beastie Boys. And I got to tell you, If we don't do No Sleep to Brooklyn as our first Beastie Boys song from a movie or TV show,
mm-hmm.
I have failed as a New Yorker. So I couldn't let that fly. So by default, we ended up with this, what I think is a deeper cut on the Smashing Pumpkins, what do you call it, musicology, song.
Discography?
Thank you. I can't.
Discography.
I can't think. We're recording this on a Friday at the end of my work week, and I am fried. But so words, while they might be bad, are not my friends right now. But while this is a deeper cut, I did find a Reddit thread that claims that this might be the greatest Smashing Pumpkins song of all time. which is probably a good segue for me to talk to you a little bit about my relationship with the Smashing Pumpkins.
All right.
I had a buddy in high school who thought they were absolutely fantastic with how they incorporated, you know, orchestral instruments into their sound. And he thought it was the greatest thing ever. And, you know, I was familiar with them from their radio work a lot. And I would describe it to him back that it landed with me like a wet fart. Like, it was never something that I gravitated to. And that's not to say that they're bad. It's just that my particular taste in music doesn't lean towards the Smashing Pumpkins. So I don't know how I'm going to react to hearing this song in full, because usually when their music hits the radio and it's a filler between two songs I like, I really look at it as just that, a filler or an extension of the commercials.
You know, my experience is not far from yours. Not my cup of tea usually. Couple of tracks on Siamese Dream I thought were good. Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness had some standout tracks. But before that, after that, not really a big Pumpkins fan. So I remember this song being in the film, but I don't remember much of it. So it's almost kind of like a first time listen for me here today.
And this song really doesn't come until the end of the film, and is really just a vehicle for us to have our conversation about the movie today. So we'll probably comment on the song a little bit. We'll cut in a little bit more about the movie. I will do my damnedest not to spoil the MacGuffin, but it's going to be a little bit tough, because when this song comes in the movie, is not only during the final act, during the final scene rolling into the credits. So everything's happened by the time we hear the song.
We can do it, Johnny. I think we can get through the whole show without ruining the surprise for folks. But let's go all the way back to 1993 and the movie Bad Words. And even earlier, May 28th, 1991, Smashing Pumpkins put on an album called Gish. This is a track from that album called Snail.
I'm sorry, I just want to cut in before everybody falls asleep during this intro and let them know that we are still here with you, and we support you in getting through the song with us. There is some would call it a dreaminess. I would call it a sleepiness to some of these Smashing Pumpkins songs. Corey, what's your initial reaction to the intro of this song?
What? Oh, sorry, I dozed off there for a second. I don't know what you just said, because I was asleep, but I describe it as being kind of sleepy.
What's interesting is, to me, Billy Corgan, who is the lead singer frontman of the Smashing Pumpkins, is also currently the president and owner of TNA Wrestling.
Right.
Which is anything but, like, it's not the best wrestling organization. But you don't equate wrestling with this type of sound.
No, this isn't the entrance music for somebody.
Yeah. Maybe a character called the Dream, where his finishing move is the sleeper hold, and who occasionally his gimmick is he is a narcoleptic who occasionally dozes off during the match.
So if the Sandman was a narcoleptic in ECW and put people to sleep, this would be his theme song?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, that makes sense. It's not a bad idea for a character now. Just, you know, go off the Sandman name, and he could put his opponents to sleep.
Well, I guess we should get back to this song.
I guess,
Well, we're going to listen to some more. We'll come back in with some more interesting banter in a little bit. Before we get into the song, do you really think that Billy Corgan wanted to play that opening, or do you think it was just a very, very reluctant thing that he felt like he needed to do to get to the beginning of the song?
Don't 90% of Smashing Pumpkins songs start this way?
I don't know. I don't listen to them enough.
Yeah, aside from the melancholy, which actually had some, you know, like Bullet Butterfly Wings and in 1979 and songs like that on it, I always equate that beginning to every single Smashing Pumpkin song, just him being all mopey on a guitar. Now it's actually starting to pick up steam a little bit as we get into the pre-chorus. I'm a little excited about where we're going to go here.
I'm just hoping it wakes me up and perks me up a little bit.
There you go. Yeah, like I said, Friday afternoon, the weekend is just a couple hours away. Come on, Billy, give us something good here. I found a quote here from Billy Corgan where he said he wanted to find the balance between classic rock of bands playing heavy riffs like Black Sabbath and Led Zeppelin and the sensuality and grace of alternative bands like The Cure, Susie and the Banshees, and My Bloody Valentine. So for him, he said he was trying to become this balance point between what felt like dumb riff rock and then the stuff we were really attracted to coming out of the UK. And then we put those pieces together with the Beatles somewhere in the middle. Do you get that rock riff on one side? Kind of mopey UK sensibilities on the other side, and then the Beatles in the middle.
No,
yeah,
no. I get a muddy middling. Yeah, you know, it doesn't just sound like it's a sound that he's going for. It sounds like, I guess we got to record an album. I don't really feel like playing today, but this is the best I got. It's not just melancholy, but it's also like a bit apathetic to me.
A little pretentious, maybe, too.
Okay. Somewhere between pretentious, apathetic, and melancholy is how I would describe it, more so than the bands that you mentioned.
Yeah. Yeah. Take the Beatles right out of your mouth, Billy Corgan. Come on. Apparently, he was experimenting with LSD while writing this album, saying it gave him the confidence to attempt all sorts of things on kind of a weird tightrope wire act. You shouldn't be writing songs in a tightrope. I think that's a bad idea, unless there's a good net behind, underneath you.
Yeah, I just, look, I don't mean to shit on the Smashing Pumpkins. I know they're a fine band and they have their fan base. I really just wanted to talk about this movie. And the next time we break in, I think we're going to do just that, because I just found a movie quote. And the tease is, at the next break, we're going to open with that.
Okay.
So we alluded to Jason Bateman's trash talking at the opening of our show, and I think I found one of my favorite lines in the movie, Corey.
Okay.
And it's Guy Trilby talking to one of the mothers of the kids in the competition. And stop me if you've heard this one before, but why don't you take your potty mouth, go locate your preteen cocksucking son, and stuff him back up that old blown out sweat sock of a vagina and scoot off back to whatever shit kicking town you came from.
Yep. This is after she confronted him at a restaurant and he had his little friend there, Chaitanya, and she swore in his presence. He's like, my God, he's a child. And then, yeah, he burst out with that.
Right. And then just to give you an idea, the opening lines of the film, right, really let you know what kind of guy Trilby is. And Corey, see, this doesn't hit any of those spoilers because this is the opening of the film. So this is going to be the first things they hear. Right. And it's Guy Trilby narrating. I think they're overlooking one of the competitions or something. You don't even see him yet. And he's like, I'm not good at a lot of stuff, especially thinking things through. And that's why this plan was so shitty. But my feelings were hurt, and I'm glad I at least did something about it. Making bad decisions is nothing new to me.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that's who Guy Trilby is at his core, is somebody who's hurt, who has a plan. He knows it's a bad plan, but it's better than no plan at all.
It's an important distinction. I'm seeing in a lot of the negative reviews, they're saying, well, Guy Trilby's not a very likable character. Well, obviously, but you have to kind of see the movie from his perspective and what he's doing. You're not supposed to really empathize with him too much, although you maybe kind of do. But that distinction, if you lose sight of that, you just think he's just an asshole.
But I also think that's a horseshit response to a movie. Mm-hmm. Because Taxi Driver is one of the greatest movies of all time, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you think that Travis Bickle is one of like a likable or a reliable protagonist in a movie, I question your morals and ethics. He's a war veteran who's suffering, but he makes some really shitty decisions in that movie. And overall, he's a disturbed man at best. So you could easily have an all-time great film with an unlikable character at its core. I think the fact that Guy Trilby is an unlikable character adds to the charm of this movie.
Oh, I agree. I remember when he was on the plane with Chaitanya, who is, you know, a foreign descent, if you can't tell from his name. And he looked at him and he said, if you don't point your curry hole that way and sit your fucking ass back down on that seat, I'm going to tell the captain that your bag is ticking.
Yeah. And it's not that he's just bigoted. He's an asshole to every single character, including Catherine Hahn, who he's banging throughout the movie. He's an asshole to her too. Like, that's the nature of his character. And it's, to me, when you take something that's thought to be as pure as the National Spelling Bee, because it's one of the competitions that we have in this country that, you know, the kids don't get paid. I don't think it generates a lot of money at all, but it's kids just competing, and it's fun to watch for a couple of days, and you root the kids on, and that's about it. So when you take something that's a competition that seems so pure on its surface, and then you inject something like a Guy Trilby into it, who is so corrupt and corrupting the entire process, that's where the humor is born. And that's how comedy works.
Yeah, this is a character that got up on the stage yelling at the moms who were booing at him. Hey, moms, let's break out the rubber pillowcases tonight. Little pricks, you're going to be counting tears, not sheep. All right, let's get back to some depressing emo music here, John. To point out, going back to the musical a bit, it's produced quite nice. This album, I believe, was produced by Butch Vig, who of course produced Nevermind from Nirvana, amongst others, from the band Garbage. I dig the production of it quite a bit.
Yeah, and that's one thing I could say about the Smashing Pumpkins, is that their production value and the production of their music is always super high quality.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the melancholy of it all that doesn't connect with me. I think this song works really well for the movie. It works for the relationship of the main characters. And I think it works for Guy Trilby in general. Like, if you told me this was his theme song, it would track.
Mm-hmm. And it kind of fits nice at the end of the movie. Again, not getting into spoilers, but just from the build of it, I thought, and maybe even lyrically too, if you listen to it, and you know the ending of the movie, it fits nice. And I know they probably went this route just because maybe the licensing rights were cheap, because they only had a $10 million budget. You can't afford to go out and get Led Zeppelin or Guns N' Roses for your soundtrack. Let's go really early's Smashing Pumpkins.
Right, and you're not looking at this like they're selling a lot of soundtracks because not a lot of people saw this movie. The question is, does the song fit the scene and does the song fit the movie? And the answer is 100%. Like, if this song were scored for this movie, which ironically it wasn't because it predates it by so much, but if this song were scored for this movie, I would believe it because it really fits. I wish there was more of that throughout the song. Like Billy Corgan, when he decides to do his little growl, when the plugged in instruments really kick into high gear, you can have the melancholy pace of the Smashing Pumpkins song, but I need more of what we just heard.
I agree. Yep. Don't know what the hell that was.
I thought it was a doorbell.
I think it's Billy Corgan coming to kick my ass. He's got some of his goons from TNA.
AEW.
Do you remember the word that Allison Janney tried to get a guy Trilby stumped on?
I do not. Do you?
It's sitting in front of me, and I don't think I could dare to pronounce it if I tried. Floxin Aachen Hilla Philippilication? Oh, fuck.
Oh yeah, it was like some asinine, and he spells it.
Yeah,
and he spells it. Like, spoiler alert, everybody. Like, there's like every letter times two in this word, and they try to stump him, and he's like, boom. But you know, that being said, it's not just like absurd with some of the words they use, but the script is also like, because it was on the blacklist. It must have been incredibly smart. And I think one of the smartest lines in the movie is by Catherine Hahn's Jenny Widgen, mm-hmm. which is like, her name is oddly Pigeon, but with a W. But she asks Guy at one point, she's like, I was wondering what the grammatical significance of this sentence is. Why run from fire ants? Corey, do you remember what the grammatical significance of why run from fire ants is?
It had all the vowels in it.
It has all the owls in it, the vowels in it, right? So, technically, starting with why, if you count why as a vowel, which it does in this particular sentence.
Yeah.
All the way through A, backwards.
Yeah.
So it's a pretty wild sentence if you think about it from that standpoint.
And it kind of shows that, yeah, he's smarter than he's letting on, maybe, because he picked up on that pretty damn quick. Some of the other words they tried to stump him on were slubbertigillion, which means a filthy, slobbering person. And then there was anti-de-establishmentarianism, which means against separation of church and state. But some really impressive words. That one I couldn't even come close to pronouncing, that started with the F there, that I have no fucking clue how they even – I didn't even know that was a word.
Yeah, it doesn't even seem like it's a word. What does it mean?
That one specifically means the action or habit of estimating something as worthless. Kind of like that word.
What is the word he uses on the plane when the kid's asking him what his favorite word is?
Autofellatio?
Autofellatio. You mean to blow yourself?
Yeah. Yeah, is the root from the Greek to do yourself or something like that?
Yeah. The kid's trying to figure out how to spell it and accidentally coming up with the meaning.
Yeah.
you know, as it goes, and Jason Bateman just wants to be left alone on the plane. You know what I'm beginning to really hate about this fucking band? Like, it sounds like the song's over. Like, this sounds like an outro.
Yeah.
Right? And you and I can see that there's clearly more time on this song.
A minute 34 to be exact, where we paused it.
Right? Right? And, like my brain's going, that's some bullshit right there.
Yeah. No, I hear you. I hear you. Let's try and get through the last minute 34 here.
I got one more bit of trash talk from Mr. Trilby.
Okay.
At the beginning of one of the spelling bees, he gets up there. And he just has such a way with words. And this screenplay has such a way with words. And he gets up there and he's like, he addresses everybody. He goes, "Hey, moms, let's break out the rubber pillowcases tonight. Little prick's going to be counting tears, not sheep."
Remember when I said that about 20 minutes ago?
Yeah, I do.
You're going to read it again?
Well, look, it's a long and painful song, and I'm trying my best to talk about the quotes without doing the spoilers. So insert spoiler at this portion, because I almost spoiled it with like three different quotes.
But you don't have to give a quote I already gave earlier in the show. That just proves you're not listening to me.
No. What it proves is this song, I thought you said that yesterday.
It felt like yesterday.
That's my point.
It was only four minutes and 4 seconds ago.
I mean, this isn't my fault, Corey. This song, my Lord, like, I, as much as I love this movie, I almost want to apologize to the listeners right now if they're still even here.
Oh, they left a long time ago. I'm sure of it. But once he started singing about flowers, save the hours, they were done. About three different endings there. This is like the Return of the King of the Smashing Pumpkins catalog.
Yeah, if the Return of the King absolutely sucked.
I'm sure there's going to be some fans of the Smashing Pumpkins listening to this, and for that, we're glad you enjoyed the song. Not my cup of tea.
And if you are a fan of the Smashing Pumpkins, can you just tweet at us why?
Why do you hate life? But you know what I am a fan of, John, is this movie. Bad Words. I recommend everybody, if you like a good dark comedy and you're not afraid of a little foul language, go seek this one out. It's a heck of a lot of fun. Richard Roper of the Chicago Times, to look at some of the reviews, called it a near perfect film. Brilliant, uncompromising, and wickedly funny. That sums up my thoughts right there.
Yeah, look, I don't know how I feel about this movie after having forced myself to listen to this song. Like, I love this movie so much, and I want everybody to go and see this movie. I'm really concerned right now that people stopped listening because the song, like, either put them to sleep or caused them to turn our show off for the first time.
Be interesting to find out. If anyone's listening out there, reach out to John and I on Twitter and let us know. You can find John at John Mariano NY or myself at CD Morissette. Did you make it all the way through the song? John would like to know.
That's all I care about. Corey, you want to put a button on this one?
Absolutely. Let's talk about the Deep Dive Podcast Network. Of course, we're very proud to be a part of the Deep Dive Podcast Network. You can check out the entire roster of shows on the Deep Dive Podcast Network.com. And what the heck? Let's do a rundown here. We got a couple of minutes here. So the shows you can find on there are, of course, myself, John Mariano, and Scott Haskin do a little show called Backtracks Aerosmith Revisited. Also, I do a show with Mark Meyer called And the Podcast Will Rock, breaking down the Van Halen catalog. Scott Haskin does a show called Uriah Heep, the Magician's Podcast. Then you can find Nate and John at the Deep Purple Podcast, The Simple Man at Skinnerd Reconsidered, Terry T-Bone Mathley at T-Bone's Prime Cuts on the Other Side, Rye at Sabbath Bloody Podcast, Paul, Joe, and David at In the Lap of the Pods, that's all things Queen, at Andy and Matt at Hawk Binge, that's the Hawkwind Podcast, Eric and Jonathan at Maiden A to Z, Daniel and Josh at Diary of the Madman, the Ultimate Aussie Podcast, Ben and Sam at University Speaking, the Red Hot Chili Peppers Podcast, George and Hattie at the Judas Priest Cast, Clay and Rye at North by South Podcast, Greg and Jonathan again at So Far, So Pod, So What, talking all things Megadeth, Kevin Brown at the Tom Petty Project, and his second show with his good buddy Randy Woods at Seaside Pod Review, another great podcast on Queen. You can check out Quinn at And Volume for All, Sav, Nick, Steve, and Mark at the Rock Roulette Podcast, and Chaz and Greg at Regarding Lulu. John, do you got anything out there you want to plug?
My butt.
All right. On that note, on behalf of John Mariano, my name is Corey Morissette. Thank you very much for listening. We'll see you next time on Backtracks Theme Music.
Excuse me. I am the mother of one of the competitors competing here.
Okay.
What you're doing is an insult to every honest child that's worked so hard to be here, including my son.
I've worked very, very hard to get here too, madam, and I'm well within the rules.
You're an asshole. That's all.
That's a child.
Yes. And I'm sure he's heard even worse from you.
I don't speak like that in front of him.
Oh, is that right?
Yes, that's right. So why don't you take your potty mouth, go locate your preteen cocksucker son, and stuff him back up that old blown-out sweat sock of a vagina and scoot off to whatever shit-kicking town you came from. Can you do that for me? Like an elephant's trunk, I'll bet. Gray.
Wow.
And distended. Good night.
Good day.
Thank you. Mothers.